Ms. Gotcha, whenever you're ready.
I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. In conjunction with Legal Aid, my name is Milani Kochka, and we represent the appellate in this matter, Ms. Calisade. And this is an unemployment matter. First of all, we think that the appeals referee did not apply the shifting burden of proof, which this court mandated in the Clark County School District v. Bundley opinion. That means that you start out looking at whether the former employee's misconduct disqualifies her from receiving unemployment benefits. The shifting burden says that the employer, the Sienna Hotel, bore the burden of proving by a preponderance of the evidence that Ms. Calisade deliberately and unjustifiably violated a reasonable policy. Then once the initial showing is made, the burden shifts to the former employee to demonstrate that her conduct can't be characterized as misconduct by explaining it and showing that it was justified under the circumstances. There's no reasonable policy in this case that Ms. Calisade violated. The only reasons given for her termination are contained in Exhibit 3, which is found at the record at Volume 2, 145, and it's a separation form. It states that Ms. Calisade was terminated for closing the cage for about an hour without authorization, and that she left the cage to go home when her shift was out of balance, $25,500, without asking permission. Now, the only evidence of any policy, any written policies, are contained in 15 A and B, located at Volume 2, 159, and they're called Written Cage and Credit Policy and Procedures. Ms. Calisade was not terminated for any violations set out in these policies and procedures. Now, Ms. Novak, Ms. Calisade's supervisor, testified at the unemployment hearing, and she said she made the termination decision and that there were two reasons for her termination. One was for leaving the bank, being over $25,000 out of balance, and the other one was for closing down a window and telling the guests, plural, that the cage was closed. Yet in Ms. Novak's original statement, which is found at Exhibit 5, Volume 2, 148, Ms. Novak said that she had received a phone call from Chris Shepherd at 6:30 saying he was having issues with the paperwork and he could not balance. Novak states in that statement that Chris switched banks so that he could learn the paperwork, and she states in that statement Chris was out of balance, $25,500. Then Novak says that when they were reviewing the paperwork, she heard the door close, they found the error in the paperwork, and the bank balanced. At Volume 2, page 111, Novak said that she knew that Ms. Calisade had to be out at the Sienna as close as possible to 7. And the reason she needed to be out at that time was because she had to pick up her daughter and take her daughter to school. On the morning of May 9th, 2013, the day when the events happened for which she was later terminated, Ms. Calisade had stayed for an extra half hour until 7:30 in the morning, and then she left to pick up her daughter to take her to school.
At the what time was her shift supposed to be over?
At 7 o'clock.
So you said she actually stayed longer than
she
her
stayed
shift.
A half hour longer than what she was supposed to.
When you change shifts for the cage, doesn't the next person or people come in at 7 o'clock normally to take over? And
correct. And Heather had come in. Heather had come in and counted down Ms. Calisade's window bank, and so she had taken over her window at the cage. Chris and Ms. Novak were back working on the computer trying to find the paperwork error with the balancing issue. And Ms. Calisade was up at Chris's window bank, which was open, and she was helping the guests. She was trying to help out her employer because Heather was involved with paperwork and Chris and Ms. Novak were looking for this error. But at the time that Ms. Calisay actually left at 7:30, there were four people in the cage. Heather had taken over her window bank. The day shift person, Sophia Patton, had come in and was presumably there to work Chris's window bank. And both Ms. Novak and Chris were back still working on the computer trying to find...
So your position was the cage was never closed, there was always people there?
It was never closed. There were always people there. And on the issue of the guests that she allegedly told come back in an hour, the cage is closed, there's actually no evidence of that. Ms. Novak testified that there was a 26-minute video that she watched in which the cage is closed and a guest comes up and Ms. Calisay was playing with her ears and ignored the guest. But that isn't the reason that she listed for the termination. Ms. Calisay says what happened was a guest came up and wanted to redeem their points, and that had to be done at the gateway. And the gateway was not open at 7. It didn't open until 8 o'clock. And so she told the guest, come back to the gateway to redeem your points. Chris Shepherd's statement, which is Exhibit 4 in the record, it's Volume 2, 146 to 47, he states that while she was checking out of the window, he heard her tell a guest to come back after an hour. That's true. She told the guest to come back after an hour, but not to the cage, but to the gateway. Ms. Novak, who was present, apparently didn't hear this exchange at all. And then Heather said that in her statement, which is at Exhibit 6, that a guest comes up to the window where Patty was, and Patty tells the guest that we are closed and will be open in an hour. Now, you know, that could have been a misunderstanding. Heather didn't testify at the unemployment hearing. Nobody got to question her about her statement. But the we are closed is at best ambiguous. As Ms. Calisay testified, she was saying that the gateway was closed and not that the cage was closed. The other thing about Heather's statement is that if Heather was really present and heard Ms. Calisay say the cage is closed, that she was the incoming relief supervisor, surely if she's present, she would have said to the guest, no, we're not closed, you know, come here, I can help you, if she was standing there. So I think that the thing about having the cage closed is really a contrivance. The videotape was never admitted into evidence. Novak said that the time that she had it closed was between 6:45 and 7:30, but arguably Calisay's function in the cage was over with by 7 because her own bank had been checked out and Heather had taken over her own window bank. And with four people in the cage, why for that half an hour, even though Ms. Calisay was there and was handling the window, but why would the duty to keep the cage open have been hers during the half hour when she was supposed to be off of her shift? There was simply no element of wrongfulness in Ms. Calisay leaving a half hour after her shift ended in order to pick up her daughter. This is very much like the Las Vegas Club case, which this court decided this year. It can be located at 2016 Westlaw 2957134. In that case, the employer provided no evidence to show that the employee was aware of the policy or that there even was a policy.
That was the marijuana case?
That's the marijuana case where the employer didn't put in any evidence of a policy that being under the influence of marijuana, you know, was against their policies and procedures. Ms. Calisay testified that she thought that Novak heard her when she said she was leaving because she looked up and she looked around and then she went back to her work. Ms. Calisay said she never understood that she had to get a verbal response back saying you have permission to leave. And the only testimony about any prior practice was not like this situation. It was actually about Ms. Calisay staying if her own bank had not been balanced. That wasn't the case here. Chris was operating both the cage bank and his window bank. Ms. Calisay only had a window bank. Her window bank had been balanced. Okay, I'd like to reserve my time. Thank you.
Ms. Carter.
May it please the court, my name is Lori Trotter. I represent Employment Security Division, the respondent. The Wagner-Peiser Act was signed into law by President Roosevelt in 1933 to assist workers who are impacted, workers and businesses who are impacted by the Great Depression. And the Employment Insurance Statute was enacted in Nevada in 1937 to ease the economic burden for those who became unemployed by no fault of their own. The legislature who enacted the statute in Chapter 612 is the parent of unemployment benefits. These benefits are not inherent rights of all Nevada citizens, as set forth in the Kane case in 1989. On review, if supported by evidence in the absence of fraud, the decision of the Board of Review is conclusive, and that's pursuant to NRS Chapter 612, Section 530, and also this court's holding in the Weber case. In reviewing the Board of Review's decision, this court is limited to determining whether the board acted arbitrarily or capriciously, or whether there was an error of law. A determination of credibility is entirely within the discretion of the Board of Review, and upon review, this court may not substitute its judgment for that of the Board of Review, nor may it pass on the credibility of witnesses, or may it weigh the evidence, but it must limit its review to a determination that the board's decision was based on substantial evidence.
But there has to be substantial evidence to support the findings of the board. So why don't you tell us what you think the substantial evidence is?
Yes, Your Honor. So I want to make clear that at the administrative level, before I get to that, if I may, Chapter 612, 500 describes that the administrative tribunal or the referee must develop all the facts without regard to common law or statutory rules of evidence. Thus, hearsay is fully admissible and shall be given the weight the referee and the Board of Review determine appropriate. And when reviewing that authority, this court can't set aside such determinations or substitute factual findings for that of the board, and that's found in the Kraft case. So substantial evidence, I'm sure you're familiar with how that's defined, and also the definition of Barnum this court made as to what misconduct as set forth in NRS Chapter 612, Section 385. Here, the decision of the Board of Review should be affirmed because it was supported by substantial evidence in the record. Appellant unjustifiably violated the employer's policy when she left the shift that she was supervising without permission before the problem with the bank being unbalanced had been resolved.
Were those policies and procedures introduced into evidence?
Yes, Your Honor, they were. Those policies don't have to be in writing, but they were introduced into evidence based on the appellant's own testimony, based on documentation that was not objected to by the appellant during the hearing concerning that was the policy, and also testimony of the supervisor. So there's repetitive evidence that that was the policy, and by appellant's own actions, she was aware of that policy and she acted upon it. Why else would she have stayed half an hour? She was the shift supervisor, and she was in charge of that bank, and she actually counted out the bank and verified the amount of the bank in question at the beginning of her shift. She had no responsibility whatsoever. Why would she be counting and verifying?
Testimony that was adduced, at least my reviewing record, her bank was in balance. She testified to, there was no objection to that. I guess one of the things that's being raised is whether or not, since her policy was she would stay if her bank was out of balance, was anything introduced that she was required to stay if the cage bank the total bank.
Yes, as the shift supervisor. She was in charge of the whole shift. She was part of the management team.
Was she, in this occasion, still in charge of that bank, or was she simply a training officer under the circumstance? Because early on, it indicates she was there to train a new person as to various things, and someone else was conducting this review of the shortage.
Yes, if you look at page 161 of the record, as part of the management team, she was the cage supervisor. She was in charge of the shift. The cage supervisors are not free to leave the shift while the bank is out of balance. And specifically, she was training Chris Shepherd regarding the bank and regarding the kiosk. And there is testimony in that regard. Let me flip to that. Appellant was training Chris Shepherd on how to operate the cage bank. That is found in the testimony of the in the appendix, page 110 and 111. The appellant admitted that she was training Chris Shepherd on the date of this incident, and she testified that she was training him to learn the kiosk machine, and the main bank responsibilities were shared between her and Chris Shepherd. That's found in 133 and 134. I believe that appellant's representation of the situation has been misrepresented. The appellant testified that she verified the main bank balance at the beginning of the shift. That's found in on the record page 131. If she didn't have responsibility for that main bank, why did she verify the main bank balance? She also claimed she wasn't supervising Chris Shepherd regarding that main bank. If that was the case, she would have had to stay on 30 minutes longer after the shift ended for no reason.
I'm partially confused because when I'm looking at the appeals referee's decision, and it just could be a typo or whatever, but they state that the substantial evidence establishes that the claimant closed the cage with authorization for approximately an hour during her last shift. Additionally, the claimant left shift without requesting permission prior to the completion of the balancing of the cage. The fact that the claimant had previously stayed past the end of her shift when balancing took longer than expected on prior occasions establishes that she understood the employee's application. But the finding, despite this statement, is that she closed without permission, but yet says establishes that the claimant closed the cage with authorization.
Right, Your Honor, Justice Douglas, I refer you to the very next sentence that you didn't read. The very next sentence says, the tribunal finds that the claimant disregarded the employer's policy when she closed all the windows during her final shift. So I
but
believe
that, I my, believe my problem, happened, my problem I, though, is in plain English, one says she did it with authorization, next says she didn't. And so which am I to believe?
It was a typo that it should have been without authorization. And the reason why we know that is because of the sentence that it says, she disregarded the employer's policy when she closed all the windows during her final shift.
I understand that's your position, but that's my concern, that one makes this finding and she doesn't. So I'm not sure on that issue, but
if I may, Your Honor, I'd also like to refer you to the evidence that the appellant claims does not exist. There's a lot of evidence about the cage window that I'd like to make reference to, but I'd also like to indicate that the referee found that the appellant's testimony was less credible than that of the employer's testimony and found some inconsistencies with her testimony. Specifically, the appellant's testimony was that she did not know the cage bank was short, and that was not credible. The appellant's own statement, if there's a written statement in the record, and I think it's found at page 168, In her own statement, she agrees that she left the bank. She left while the bank was out of balance. She knew it was out of balance, and that was something she submitted to the Employment Security Division as part of her claim. And I also wanted to make reference to the issue regarding the windows. The two pieces of evidence that the appellant discounts and says doesn't exist is the hearsay testimony, which is permissible in this type of case, is that the supervisor, Sheila Novak, viewed the video and saw that the windows to the cage were closed. She testified that there was a next window police sign in both of the windows, and it was closed. And she testified that she saw the guests coming up the window, and that the appellant didn't even address the person. The next thing is that Heather Constantinakis also in her statement indicated that that very morning the windows were closed, both windows were closed. And what the appellant did not make reference to is her own statement. She testified that she put up a sign in the window that said, next window, please. She put up a sign. And then as to the second window, she testified she didn't know if Chris Shepherd's window was also closed. So she wasn't even sure what she's claiming is to the court today is correct. And that's why the referee found that the employer's evidence was more credible. And there was two different pieces of evidence that supported the employer's position in that situation. So this court needs to consider that the referee did consider the credibility of all the witnesses in this case, including the employer's witnesses. And so the fact that not all the employers testify doesn't mean that that information is not appropriately considered. There's a number of statements in the record that this court needs to consider. And it was admissible below. Incidentally, the appellant had an opportunity to object to the veracity of these written statements. There's no objection whatsoever in the record to admissibility of the statements that I'm referring to. So she obviously didn't think there was any problem with the veracity of the statements that were admitted. The referee also gave the appellant multiple opportunities to present her evidence as she wished. And those that was found. At the very end of the hearing, the referee gave both the appellant's representative and the appellant the opportunity to ask any questions and to present any additional evidence she saw fit. And at that point, she said she didn't need to submit any more evidence. The other thing I'd like to point out is the appellant suggests that she was justified in leaving her shift because she had child care issues. Well, as we know, an employer has a needs to treat all employees the same, cannot discriminate against an employee because an employee has a child or child care issues. The same thing is, likewise, it would be improper for an employer to treat a parent differently and to allow an employee to use a child as an excuse for violating the employer's policy.
But her shift was up, you know, like that at 7 o'clock. And I understand the issue of the policy of remaining till this cash balance thing's resolved. But, I mean, she stayed a half an hour late. Her daughter, I'm sure, was relying on her to pick her up and go to school. I mean, sometime we've got to use some common sense on this.
Common sense would be if that was an emergency, she would have approached her supervisor and said, look, I have this problem. I need to go attend to my child. Can I have permission to leave in this situation? She was the supervisor. She was in charge of the bank in that shift, and she should have approached her supervisor and requested permission. And the evidence is very clear that the supervisor wasn't requested permission that she leave, nor did the supervisor hear anything that the appellant. And in fact, three people were in the booth at the time. They heard nothing about her announcing that the appellant was leaving. All three people, Chris Shepherd, Heather, and Sheila Novak, heard nothing about her announcing that she was leaving. In fact, all they heard was the door shut. So in such an emergency, when you're a supervisor, you need to consider the interests of the employer. This is not a burden-shifting thing. In a misconduct case, it's what the employer has a reasonable right to expect. And with a bank that's out of balance of $25,000 or more, it would be appropriate for the supervisor who has responsibility for that shift to approach her supervisor and say, I have an emergency. I need to leave. That was not done in the situation. She just left. There's two other witnesses to that effect, and that was found in the record based on these other witnesses' statements to which appellant did not object to.
Okay, thank you. I understand your position. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
And this, the other thing that wasn't mentioned earlier today is the appellant, as a supervisor, was an exempt employee. So she didn't punch a clock, and she had shifts. But she had a duty to remain until all the responsibilities of her shift were concluded. So it wasn't out of the ordinary for her to stay longer. half an hour, an hour, whatever it may be, until the her duties were done, because she did not punch a clock. And so she was, based on her own behavior, she was aware that she had a duty to remain until that bank was balanced. And she, and by her own conduct, she was aware of what that policy was. Court's indulgence. Appellant also makes a misguided attempt to defer blame on others. She complains that other people should have assisted her with various responsibilities as the shift supervisor, which justifies her violation of the employer's policies. In this case, we don't show any question where she asked anyone to help her. There's no evidence that she asked for help, but also in a misconduct case, it's about what the employer's expectations are that the appellant follow that policy. And here, she failed to follow that policy.
Thank you, Ms.
Miller. Thank you.
Ms. Kachka. And if you could comment on the closed with authorization versus closed without authorization, and also the child care issues that were raised as to whether it's even an issue.
Well, the first thing about child care issues is it wasn't raised in their brief, and I haven't heard anything about it until today during the oral argument. But
Did your client tell the other employees that she had to leave because she had to take her daughter to school?
Yes. And
so that evidence is in conflict?
Yes. At Chris Shepard's statement, Exhibit 4A, he says that Patty was very worried about trying to get her daughter, and she was really anxious to leave. And in Heather's statement, Exhibit 6, she said that Patty was in a hurry to leave, and that's why she wanted to check out Chris's window bank. So other people knew that she was in a hurry to leave, and Novak herself testified that when she first came and got the job, that the property had told her that Patty needed to be out of there as close to 7 as possible. So Novak knew that too. And the only testimony that she ever deviated from that was when her own bank was short and she had to balance it. But her bank had balanced and been balanced out prior to 7 o'clock because Heather had come in.
Was she the supervisor? Was she in charge of the whole bank for everybody or not?
No. She says that when she came in to work that night, Chris wasn't there yet. So she verified the bank. But then she said that Chris was going to operate the main bank, so he re-verified it to make sure her numbers were accurate. So, and from that moment on, she had nothing to do with that bank. Chris ran that bank and handled that bank, and Ms. Callisay just had her own window bank. Chris was operating two banks, the cage bank, and he was operating his window bank. And specifically, she was training him on paperwork on the new kiosk system that they had put into being. But he was a relief supervisor himself. I mean, he had been a supervisor. He certainly knew about the cash handling procedures in terms of, you know, making the change and everything else. What he was training on was just the paperwork.
Ms. Kachka, can I ask you one thing? Ms. Trotter is making the legal arguments, which we would expect the burden and, you know, the deference we must give to the findings made by the Employment Security Department, weighing the credibility and all that. What would your response to that be?
Well, in her findings, first of all, she didn't address general credibility. The only place where she mentions credibility is when Patty said, "I said I needed to leave." And Novak said, "I didn't hear her say that. I just heard the door closed." And Chris said he didn't hear her say that. Heather said she didn't hear her say that. And in that one limited circumstance, she said, "They didn't hear you say that. They've got more credibility." But it's not really a credibility issue, because Patty testified that she couldn't say for sure that they heard her, but she thought that it had been acknowledged. But when Ms. Novak looked up and looked around and then went right back to the work, but she testified that she didn't know she needed verbal permission at that point to leave, because think about it, there were already four cage employees there. What was it she was supposed to do? She wasn't involved in verifying the bank. Both Chris and Novak were working on verifying the cage bank. I mean, there wasn't anything she could do. They were looking for a paperwork error. They didn't really believe that the bank was short that. Even Novak said it was a variance. Variances happen all the time. We found the money. You know, this is a common thing. It was a paperwork error. It wasn't a case of missing money. And so, I mean, the appeals referee's decision has to be supported by substantial evidence in the record. She just can't, you know, make decisions without there being evidence of this wrongfulness intent. And in terms of the record, you asked me to address where she found that she did have authorization, but then seemed to say in another place that she didn't have authorization. There was no testimony that anybody saw Khaleesi put up signs closing the windows, or Calisay. Ms. Calisay says, I put up the close the window sign for my window because Heather was coming in to check me out. And then she says, I stayed that half hour. I stayed there for the employer handling Chris's window because Chris was in the back and he hadn't been checked out yet. And so she did have her employer's interest at heart. She stayed, she handled the guests, and then when she absolutely couldn't stay any longer, she left to pick up her daughter. I hope I've answered your questions. Thank you.
Well, the court thanks both of you for your spirited but very professional argument and your briefs in this matter, and this matter will stay submitted.